Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hi, everybody, and I'm so happy that you're joining me today. And if you love animals, you've landed in the right spot. Today, my guest is Ellie Lax. She's the founder of The Gentle Barn. And if you love animals, like I said, you're going to love this show. Welcome to the show, Ellie.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Before we get into how the Gentle Barn started and what the Gentle Barn is all about, would you mind just telling us just a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you a little bit?
Sure. I love animals, and I always have since I was a little girl. My love of animals caused me to be teased when I was a kid, and so I was kind of embarrassed, but now I own it full out. And if you love animals, you're a friend to me. And if you don't love animals, I don't know, maybe we can't be friends. I am married to my husband, Jay Weiner, and he runs the Gentle Barn with me. And we also have three children, 14 years old, 21, and 22. And they're remarkable people with their own visions and dreams, but very tender and loving hearts as well.
What doesn't surprise me one bit that you would have children that have tender, loving hearts. And that's terrific, and I didn't know that about yourself. So I'm happy that you shared that little bit about you. Us is not us. All right. So we are going to, oh, my goodness. You know what? What you're experiencing right now is honestly my excitement. I am really, truly excited to feature you. I know people that have visited you, and I know when COVID is over, I'm on it. I'm going to be there, and we will hug it out. But for right now, let's just let our listeners know about the Gentle Barn. So tell us a little bit about the Gentle Barn.
Sure. The Gentle Barn does two things. We take in animals that have nowhere else to go because they're either too old, too sick, too lame, or too scared to be adoptable by other agencies. And instead of euthanizing them, we bring them home to the Gentle Barn where we heal them with vet care, but we also use acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractics, deep tissue massage therapy, ultrasound, ice therapy, water therapy, energetic healing, nutritional supplements, and lots of love. Once they're finally happy and healthy, if we can find them a home and family of their own, great. If not, we give them sanctuary with us for the rest of their lives. And then when they're ready, the animals help us with our second part of our mission, which is to partner with the animals to heal people with the same stories of trauma and connect children to the magic and love of animals. So at the Gentle Barn, we partner with the animals when they're ready to host open to the public Sundays, school field trips, private tours, corporate events, and special needs groups with kids from the inner city or who might be at risk, drug and alcohol rehab centers, war veteran centers, domestic violence shelters, senior centers, homeless shelters. Really, any human that's struggling out in the world, they can come and find hope and inspiration with the animals.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that. I know that you, just as an example of an airport, I had guests on my show a year or two ago where they had animals just at the airport. They were pups, to just calm passengers down that may be anxious about flying. And by just the touch of petting an animal, I would imagine that that's very similar to what you're talking about at the Gentle Barn, where if you've never really stroked a horse or a pig or a cow, I mean, your website, gentlebarn.org, is loaded with incredible pictures of beautiful animals of all types. And and ages, and all with their own names. I am so fascinated, with your website, and I know it's ever growing, and I understand that as well. And there's a newsletter. There's all kinds of things for people to look at to know about Caesar, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I recognize what you said about the two main issue, the two main goals. And I think that that's probably why everyone wants to be with you. So what was your inspiration in the beginning to start rescuing these animals?
Well, I was really lucky to grow up surrounded by nature. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri when I was a little kid, and there was a lake right down the street, and there was woods behind my houses, and there was a great big garden on our property. And so I was constantly surrounded by butterflies and birds and bees, and I would nestle into the honeysuckle and just watch the bees and the butterflies float around me. I would go down to the lakes, and I would play with the ducks and watch tadpoles turn into frogs. And so I just thought nature was magic, and I couldn't get enough of it. And so I grew up surrounded by these animals. And as I got older, I started realizing that sometimes animals need help. Sometimes I would find turtles with broken shells or orphaned bunny rabbits. And I was like, oh, my God, they need me. They had done so much for me, being my friends and my sanctuary, that of course when I saw them in trouble, I wanted to help. And I would bring the animals home, and my poor mom didn't want a house full of animals. And so I kept telling her since I was 7 years old, I would say, you'll see, when I grow up, I'll have a huge place full of animals, and I'll show the world how beautiful they are. And that was my mantra. The other thing that struck me at 7 years old, while I wanted to have a house full of animals and couldn't, was that I was so passionate about animals. I saw them as my teachers, healers, and friends, and it was so obvious that they had so much to teach me and to bring me to enrich my life. But the people around me didn't see it the same way. The people around me either tortured animals for fun or saw them as belongings that you could throw out when you didn't want them anymore. My mom kept casting out animals that I was trying to save, telling me, don't be ridiculous. And so I had this thought, like, why do I see something in animals so clearly, but the people around me can't? And so that's another reason why I thought, when I grow up, I'm gonna help animals, and I'm gonna show the world how beautiful they are. And I just held on to that vision and kept repeating that mantra. I would doodle pictures of animals on my desk at school, and I would fantasize about the animals I would get to hold and love when I was going to sleep at night. But I didn't know how to do it. You know, I didn't have money or land. Everyone told me that I was crazy. And so I kept holding on to this vision, not knowing how to start it, when 20 years ago I discovered a petting zoo I'd never seen before. And I went in just to be nosy, but discovered a petting zoo full of animals that were really, really suffering. Their toenails were overgrown. Their bodies were falling apart. And the place was full of people smiling and having fun, and no one could see the suffering right in front of them. And there it was again, that distinction where I could see something in animals that other people couldn't. And I was absolutely sick to my stomach and running for the door to get out of there. And blocking the exit was a very old goat that looked me in the eyes and asked me for help and stopped me in my tracks. And so I went to find the owner saying, hey, can I have that goat? At the time I was a young adult, I lived in Los Angeles, and I had a little house with a half-acre backyard. So I figured, well, I could bring home a goat. And I told the goat, yes, I will help you. I'll be right back. And I went to find the owner saying, hey, can I have the goat? And she said, no. And I said, well, can I buy her? Name your price. And she said, no, leave me alone. And I said, well, that goat needs help. And if I leave not taking her, she's going to die here. So I'm going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed at the petting zoo for 12 days.
Oh, my gosh.
And finally, on the 13th day, she came and found me and told me to take the goat and get the heck out of there. So I was able to find that little goat. Her name was Mary, and I got to bring her home and heal her. Of course, with the veterinarian, he came and removed her tumors and taught me how to trim her nails and taught me how to keep her and feed her. And a few months later, she was bouncing around my backyard as happy as can be. And it was the greatest feeling I'd ever had in my life. It was like, oh, my God, this is what I was born to do. This is who I am. So after that experience, I went back to the petting zoo and took more of their animals until my little half-acre backyard was full of them. And I realized right then and there that I had started my dream. And I'd never been that happy than when I finally found myself among those animals. And a few years later, my husband came in as a volunteer, and he took us from a little half-acre backyard and a handful of animals to now we're a national organization with hundreds of animals. And now we run the Gentle Barn together. And I'm very, very, very grateful to be doing what we're doing.
I don't know how anybody listening to this cannot be touched with emotion. I know I am. And, you know, it's animals mean different things to different people, depending upon who you are, maybe where you are in your life. I name the squirrels in my backyard. I name the scrub jay. I feed the birds. I'm like the little Mary Poppins here in Westchester, you know, feed the birds and the squirrels. And it's a habit that I've had for a very long time, and I'm very mindful of them, and they bring me so much joy to watch them and to just be a part of nature, just like what you said, just the butterflies, whatever. And I mean, I live in a very, you know, this is very urban where I live. And I very much appreciate what you're saying about animals. Not only do we help to teach them, but they help to teach us. And I just think that it's a beautiful thing. And so just out of curiosity, so I know you have three locations, and we're going to talk about the other two in a moment. I know you're in Santa Clarita right now. How much property do you have at this current location that you're at in Santa Clarita?
So we have two properties in Santa Clarita, which is 30 minutes north of Los Angeles. We have kind of an overflow property, which is 15 acres for the younger animals that need more room. But our main location is 5 acres, and that's where we house the older animals that need more more care.
I see. Well, I guess what would make me really curious is that how do you, so I understand that it started with the petting zoo, and I'm sure people, animals at the petting zoo probably never got purchased the way you decided to start bringing these animals to you. But so where else do you find these animals to rescue, or do people contact you? How does that work? How do you rescue these? Where do they come from?
Yeah, they come from all over. So we work with the Los Angeles Police Department. They bring us animals from cruelty cases. We work with all the animal shelters within a 60-mile radius. They call us about the animals that are not adoptable, that are going to be destroyed. We work with animal rescues as well, because the other rescues will take in the young, socialized, adoptable, healthy animals, but they'll call us about the blind dog or the lame horse or the feral cat. And then people call us also when they see things that are outrageous. They call us, and we see if we can help.
Well, I can sort of appreciate what maybe is animals in the animal shelters. They're typically dogs and cats and maybe turtles and things like that. But you have a lot of what I would, in my mind of not maybe having this distinction correctly, you have a lot of what we would call farm animals, where you have cows and bulls and sheep and goats and pigs. They're not, are they in animal shelters also that come to you? Because I don't know that.
Yeah, they sure are. You would be surprised at the people in the city that get animals they're not really supposed to have. The Gentle Barn, we are home to horses, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, turkeys, peacocks, llamas, dogs, cats, donkeys, and we even have a parrot and a pigeon. And so just even an hour north of us, there's a place called Lancaster, which is big, open, wide spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And we have investigated hoarding situations there where they not only had farm animals but a whole sea of dogs in cages. There are chickens in the middle of the city. There are people that have backyard pigs that are not supposed to. There's all kinds of animals. We even came home with a day-old goat that was in a South Central Los Angeles animal shelter. And what he was doing there, we have no idea.
Isn't that fascinating? That's really interesting. That's interesting to me how that can happen. I suppose, you know, you can understand if I understand today that in a lot of the shelters where they're specifically dogs and cats, they're pretty emptied out right now from what I understand because people are home and they're more apt to want to foster or rescue and things like that. But you have so much property. It's interesting that you can have the big animals as well. And I liked what you said that, if I understood you correctly, you have the opportunity to adopt out some of these animals, or if not, they just stay with you for life. Did I get that correct?
Yeah. So some of the animals need ongoing care for the rest of their lives because, again, we take in animals that are not adoptable, that are broken to begin with. So some of the animals need ongoing care for the rest of their lives, in which case we give them sanctuary with us and we just care for them. But some animals we can heal quite quickly, and then they're perfectly adoptable. And so we found homes for horses, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens. I even found a home for a turkey where the turkey lived in somebody's living room. She loved him. When they're adoptable and we can heal them quickly, they go to live their best lives with their own family and home. But if they're not adoptable or there's some reason why they have to stay with us to get ongoing care, then we just give them sanctuary here with us.
I would imagine that doesn't come without a cost. And to maintain, how many animals are currently at your Santa Clarita location right now?
We have about 105 animals here in Los Angeles, and then we have a location in St. Louis, Missouri, and Nashville, Tennessee. So collectively, we are taking care of almost 200 animals.
Wow. Your St. Louis and Nashville locations are relatively new. Is that right?
Yes. We opened in St. Louis almost 3 years ago, and we opened in Tennessee 5 years ago, or almost 6 years ago.
Okay, great. I'm just trying to process all that you're doing. So I guess where I was going is that this can't come without a cost. And you are a nonprofit, and I know that you accept contributions, and people can even go as far as to adopt, or maybe adopt isn't the word I mean, but to support a particular animal. Like right now, I told you I was a bird person, so I've been looking at fern. So for those of you that haven't visited this website, or you can go to their Facebook page, or just and watch Fern, just taking a bath, and I'm thinking, how did you get Fern to adjust to being around a human the way you have? That just kills me. That's just so cool.
So Fern is a pigeon, and
yes.
I was driving down a 4-lane highway, driving my daughter to dance class, and this pigeon, I kid you not, she was on the sidewalk, and she literally stepped into the road in front of my car. Now, I mean, how crazy it is, out of hundreds of cars, she stepped in front of my car, like she was hailing the Gentle Barn taxi. I swerved from hitting her. I couldn't believe she did that. I swerved from hitting her, and I looked in my rearview mirror as she toddled across this 4-lane highway, dodging cars at the last second.
Oh,
people were screeching
God.
On their brakes and swerving. I don't know how she made it across alive. It makes no sense. I finally did a U-turn in this thick traffic, got to her by the time she had crossed to the other side. I picked her up, and I put her in my car because she was just going to go right back into the road again and get hit this time. So I picked her up and put her in my lap, and I got to tell you, from the first second I met her, she is the most nonchalant, chilled-out pigeon I have ever met in my life. She didn't, you would think that a wild pigeon being handled by humans would be like, oh, my God, but she just sat in my lap like, okay, now I'm sitting in somebody's lap in a car. She was not ruffled at all. So I brought her to the vet to have x-rays to explain why she wasn't flying. Turns out that somebody had shot her, so she had bullets in her wings.
Oh.
And the veterinarian said that the little pieces of bullets you would risk her life by operating, so you should just leave her be and she'll never fly again. So of course I took her home and now she lives in my house. And
she
is not ruffled by anything. There's nothing she cares about. She'll land on the back of my dogs, which isn't a very good idea, so I have to watch her closely. She flies around our house, but she can't fly for long distances, so she couldn't live in the wild. She would get picked off by a hawk. But she's as happy as can be. She takes baths in our sink. She lands on our shoulders or our heads while we're working. She coos to us while we're cooking in the kitchen. She's so much fun.
All right. So here's the question. I trust me. So what was the thought behind naming the pigeon Fern?
Well, it was really funny because, like I mentioned, I was driving my daughter to dance class, and we just were talking because my daughter had just read Charlotte's Web.
Oh.
And she was telling me about the book, and she said, you know, Fern is such a lovely name. That's a character in the book. She said, we should name an animal Fern. And I said, you know what? Next animal we rescue, we'll name her Fern. And then literally 3 seconds later, this pigeon walks in front of our car.
Oh, my God. The universe
in
your life is just incredible. You know, you hear about the dog whisperer. You hear about different people. And it's like, gosh, they really should do a PBS. You should really be on television doing what you do. I maybe you've done it already, but I would certainly watch a show about you on television and just having you share this, because I look at Stevie the squirrel, who I tell people he did not mean to bite me. He really didn't. He didn't. But I was handing him a peanut, and he lost his balance because I didn't let him wait till he got on the ground where he was balanced. And so as he reached out with his little tiny fingers to grab the peanut, hello, Marcia, he lost his balance. And so he started, so the peanut dropped. Well, guess what didn't drop? My finger. And so it's like, yow. And I'm looking at it going, dang. Well, yeah, that's bleeding, isn't it? I know you didn't mean to bite me, Stevie. Well, I got to tell you, I didn't realize, but thankfully for social media, and I know a lot of my friends have heard this story a million times, but because of social media and because I wasn't smart enough to figure this on myself, I posted this, right? And people are going, you got to get to your doctor. I'm thinking, why do I have to go to the doctor? Hello? You need to get a tetanus shot. Oh. Well, thank you. So I did. I got a tetanus shot. I got my antibiotics, and, you know, Stevie still comes into my yard, and Scrubby the Scrub Jay still comes into my yard, and I get it. I mean, I don't have any pets right now. I've had cats, but those animals mean the world to me. So I get it. I just want to come play at your house, you know, and watch Fern just walk around your house. I mean, I just think that's just so cool. But so let's talk about your oldest living animal currently living at your location. Let's talk about Caesar.
Caesar is one of the wisest beings I've ever met. It's such an honor to know him, to be able to care for him. His color is called Gruya, which is a very rare color. It's 1 out of 1,000 buckskins turn out Gruya. And basically he's a gray horse, a deep gray horse with a black mane, black legs, and black tail. He's absolutely stunning. He was a movie horse. His last movie that he was in was Zorro. And, you know, it's not glamorous for animals, unfortunately. It's very glamorous for people. You know, they get the big paychecks. They get to be famous, get to be treated well. With animals in the movie industry, not so much. They're basically forced to do what they're told and not allowed to make mistakes. So Caesar was trained with a very heavy hand, and when he made mistakes, he was hit. It got so bad that eventually he froze completely, and he refused to look at anybody. He refused to move, and he just basically said to them, beat me to death. I don't care. I'm done. So after a while, they realized that he was not useful to them, so they threw him out. And we were very lucky to be able to scoop him up and bring him home to the gentle barn, where it took us 3 years to heal him. I wanted to hold him and caress him and kiss him and pet him and show him that I loved him. But that did not bring him joy, because the minute I went near him, he assumed I was going to hit him. And so he would just suck in all his breath and hold staunch, expecting the blow. And so I had to do something to show my love for him, but caressing him wasn't going to be it, nor did he take treats from my hands. He wouldn't eat out of my hands. So you know what I came up with? I came up with singing to him. Every morning I would go down to his stall and I would stand away from him so he wouldn't feel threatened, and I would just sing to him. And at first he thought I was crazy, but eventually he turned to face me, and each singing session he would stand closer and closer and closer until one day he walked all the way over to me. He put his head on my chest, closed his eyes, and breathed out a sigh of relief. And I got to sing to him like that every single morning. And that led to me being able to pet him and feed him, and it led to him being able to trust me. And then my husband took him out on trail rides where he got a chance to express his anger and his fear and his fright. And my husband would just sit quietly on him and say, you know, tell me more. And he got to buck and rear and run away with him. And he got to do whatever he needed to do to express the trauma he had been through. And my husband just sat quietly on him until eventually 3 years later, the anger and the fear and the pain was all out of his body. And once he had recovered, he became the leader of our herd. So he protects everyone else. He loves them more than he loves himself. He lets them go in for dinner before him. He makes sure that they're acting nicely towards each other and not fighting. And he is just breathtaking. He's absolutely breathtaking. And I've learned so much from him, and I want to be like him when I grow up. The joke, and it wouldn't be a joke if I could make it happen, is I would make him a human and clone him, and I would hand one out to all my single ladies that I know. Like, he's marriage material.
Oh, my God. Yes, he's going to be on a dating site. So how old is he then?
He's 33 years old, and horses typically live anywhere from 20 to 30. Yeah, so he's a very old and wise gentleman. His wife, the matriarch of our herd, passed away a year ago. So I'm sure he's longing to make his transition and be with her, but he won't leave his family. He needs to stay behind and take care of them.
Wow. Do you leave everybody speechless? I'm seriously, you know, I have questions that I certainly want to ask you, but this feels just, I don't know, maybe because of how we're living today and how sequestered so many of us are, your spirit, your love is infectious, and infectious in the best use of that term, because right now that term has such a negative connotation. But if we could all be infected with your joy and your respect, we would be living in a different world, my friend. Okay, let me
Thank
see if
you,
I can
Marcia.
Pull this together. I mean that. I sincerely mean that. So, because you've got these three locations, and obviously you have a partner in crime, and are your kids, are they on property with you as well, or are they off into their own lives and families and things? Are they at the barn with you?
My
okay,
two
so
grown
they're
kids, the 21 and... What?
Mm-hmm.
My two grown kids, the 21 and 22-year-old, they're off doing
thing. Oh, yeah, 14-year-old.
They love animals. But the 14-year-old lives at home with us, and she's homeschooled, and so she participates in the Gentle Barn with everything that we do. She volunteers when we're open to the public.
Terrific.
She actually is employed by the Gentle Barn to host field trips and private tours.
Nice.
And she helps
That's
with the
really
animals
nice.
Every day. She's remarkable.
Well, that kind of leads me to what my next curiosity, which was, and I don't even know if this is a realistic question, because what does typical mean? But what I would be curious to know about, you know, what a typical day is like for you. In my mind, I could imagine that you wake very early. Animals need to be fed, and water needs to be provided, and all of those things need to happen. So what, and I don't know if you have a staff besides yourself, your husband, and your daughter. Do you have other people that are employed or volunteer that come? I've asked you too many questions at once. So why don't you just take us through what a typical day. I'm sorry, I'm excited. Well, take us through what a typical day looks like for you.
Sure, absolutely. So now we're a 20-year-old organization. So now, thank the Lord, we have we have staff that help us. Back in the day, for the first 10 years, it was just me and Jay waking up at the crack of dawn, feeding all the animals, putting out hay, making big porridges for the pigs, cleaning up, filling up water buckets, and that was a big, big, big job. But now, thankfully, at 20-year organization, we do have staff. And so a typical day looks like for me, we wake up very, very early because I still have to feed the dogs, the cats, the birds, the pigeon, the parrot that live in the house. So I feed them first and get them cleaned up and squared away while my staff outdoors is feeding all the horses, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, turkeys, peacock and llama, and emu. But once everybody is fed, the barnyards are cleaned, the bowls are put away, everybody's got fresh water, the barnyard is clean, everybody's groomed, then most of the animals go out to pasture, and that's when we start our tours. Now, because of COVID-19, we're closed down to the public right now, but we're doing everything virtually. So we're doing virtual classrooms where children can tune in through Zoom and learn science standards while learning all about animals. We're also doing virtual tours, virtual field trips, virtual birthday parties and corporate events. We're doing gentle hacks. So through corporate Zooms, you know, companies now are meeting through Zoom across the country. They can hack into the gentle barn for 10 minutes and spend some time in the barnyard with our bliss. We're doing a lot of live feeds on social media, Instagram and Facebook, trying to share our bliss with the world, because what the world is going through right now is really heavy. People are isolated and alone. People are scared, struggling with for money or and health. And we want there's so much bliss in our barnyard because what's happening out in the world is not affecting our animals. So they are as happy as can be. Their tails are wagging. They're spending time together. They're splashing in the pools. They're running and galloping in the pastures. And there's so much hope and bliss that lives in our barnyards. And we want to share that with as many people as we possibly can. So online, virtually, we are coming into people's homes so they can stay connected to hope and inspiration. They can stay connected to the gentle barn, and they can stay connected that there still is good in the world, even though we might not see it on the news.
Right. You know, it's funny. I think many of us have to monitor how much news we watch just to stay in balance, and I think you and I have talked about the fact that, you know, yoga can help us do that, and I believe you practice yoga as well. Am I right about that?
Yes, absolutely, and daily meditations.
Yeah. And daily meditation is right. So for those of us that do that, to reach that calm, to get those shoulders down, to find some peace and serenity for where we are, to be grateful, all of those things really help at a time like this when you're bombarded with the latest nasty thing that you might see on television. And many of the networks I've noticed oftentimes will conclude the news with something that's positive. And it would be wonderful if you could be featured to just let people see that there is goodness out there, and that, you know, if you end up with an animal that you can no longer care for, or the animal decides that they're going to find you like Fern did, you know, it's nice to know that there's a place for them to be. And is it different at the Los Angeles location, as far as the type of population that you have, as opposed to what you might see in your St. Louis and your is it Nashville, Tennessee that you're located?
Yeah.
Okay. So Nashville. Between the Nashville and the St. Louis locations, do you have a different variety of animals that stay at those gentle barns?
No, they're similar animals. We have more animals at the Los Angeles location just simply because we've been here for 20 years. But in Nashville and St. Louis, yeah, we have horses, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, and turkeys. So we have we have llamas and emus here in California, and a pigeon and a parrot.
is your parrot in the house?
Maybe. Yeah,
yeah. Your parrot is it a male or a female?
She's a female, and the pigeon is a male, and the two of them make the oddest friends.
Oh, my God, I love that. That's just great. I bet you've learned a lot of lessons from these animals over these years, haven't you? What would be a lesson that you would say you've learned about in life about these animals?
Oh, my God, I can go on and on. They have taught me so much. I say that the animals that have come across my path have made me a better human being. They teach me so much. They've taught me so much. I mean, there's the obvious things, like they teach me every day about how to live in the moment. You know, these animals are not busy on their cell phones with their heads bent down. They're not distracted. They live in the moment. They are such active listeners. They give you their whole being when they're in front of you. And they really engage with each other like that too. Especially with the cows, like family is the most important virtue to these animals. They love their families. They give their whole heart to raising their children and coming together as a community to celebrate birth and to mourn loss and to really support each other. And so they're the example of what humans should and could be. If we would just put down our phones and stop worrying about the past or the future, and if we could just get into present time, focus on each other, and give ourselves to one another, we can be such a beautiful, beautiful society. They've also taught me a lot about quote-unquote death. You know, at the Gentle Barn, we have animals that get very, very old. We have animals that come in young, but we can't save them. And that's been one of the biggest hurdles at the Gentle Barn, is trying to live with this concept that we don't know when we're going to leave. We don't know how much time we have with a loved one. And watching the animals process through transition has been life-changing for me. Just recently, we rescued two mommy cows with their babies, and they came into the Gentle Barn, and one of the babies was very, very, very sick, and she was so bright and light and beautiful, and she just was one of the most brilliant beings I've ever met, and she could not overcome her illnesses. She did not have enough of an immune system, and she passed away after 3 weeks, and I was really struggling with it. You know, why couldn't I save her, and what could I have done differently? And I tried so hard, but it wasn't enough. And I just was really grief-stricken. And looking at her mother, of course, her mom bellowed and mooed and cried and grieved. But she cried and grieved for a very short time. And it was just amazing to watch the wisdom and the grace with which she moved through this loss of her daughter. First of all, I think she acknowledges that her daughter's spirit is still with her. She just had to leave her body. So I think there's a wisdom in that that I learned from them. And then she put her focus away from the loss and the transition and the change and back to the other baby that was with them and nurturing him and raising him and being grateful for the gifts that she still had. And it blows me away. And so because of the animals, I wake up every single day grateful, counting my blessings. Because of the animals, I move away from loss and towards gratitude faster. And I just look at the bigger picture more, and I think animals tend to do that a lot. They don't get lost in the small stuff. They come from looking at the big stuff and the big picture and great big love and great big family. And they're my heroes. They've taught me everything I know, and they make me a better person.
It's obvious. When people that have never been around or really even pet a cow, maybe they've never even touched a horse, frankly, or maybe a goat, is there anything about the animals that surprise people who come to meet them? when you're back and open. I mean, I know we've been closed for several months, but you've been in business a very long time. So has there ever been stories where you've had guests to the barn and they share with you something that they found surprising?
Yes, absolutely. And I think all the animals are surprising in their own way. I mean, they're stories of resilience and perseverance. It blows people away how they could still be happy after the abuse they've gone through. But we have two animals that surprise people the most, and I think it's the cows and the turkeys. People come into the gentle barn when we're open to the public. They get to come in and hug the cows. And people cannot believe that such giant, enormous animals can hold still and be so gentle and their energy be so strong. It moves people to tears. And the other thing that moves people to tears is cuddling with the turkeys. Most people that come into the gentle barn had no idea that girl turkeys like to cuddle. And so you can sit down on the ground with them, put your legs on either side of them, and scooch up real close so they're right in front of you. And when you pet them, the turkeys close their eyes and fall asleep in your lap. And it is the most beautiful thing. People openly weep when they're cuddling the turkeys.
Wow. But only the females, am I right about that?
Yes. So the boy turkeys like to show off. Our boy turkey here in California, his name is Romeo, and all he wants to hear is that he's handsome. He doesn't want to cuddle. But the girl turkeys love to cuddle, and they'll crawl right in your lap, and they'll fall asleep in your laps, and they're just so sweet and affectionate and loving that people can't believe it.
Wow. And when you go back to the cows, they are really strong, and yet what you're saying is that they can be hugged, they'll hold still, and people are surprised about that, right? I don't even know how much a cow weighs. I have no sense of how much a cow weighs. I have no idea.
They're anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 pounds. They're really big, large animals that could throw you to the moon if they wanted to. But they don't.
Wow.
They stand still or they lay down so you can really embrace them and cuddle into them. And the most magical thing about the cows is the work that we do with children who are from the inner city and who are at risk.
Yes.
We do a great deal of work with teenagers who come into the gentle barn very, very angry, shut down, acting out. They want to be cool in front of their friends, and they don't want to hug a cow. And so we always start with the cows because the minute these tough teenagers put their faces on a cow for the first time, you can literally see their tough, hard exterior melt into little boys. And within seconds of hugging a cow, they are open and vulnerable. They're talking.
Hmm.
They're sharing experiences. And they melt into little boys and little girls. And then we can really get inside and do the incredibly life-changing work of connecting them to all living beings, opening their hearts, sharing their pain, and mirroring them how beautiful they are and how much potential they have in the world. And they leave the gentle barn changed. But we always start with the cows.
Isn't that interesting? So do you work with, are there a lot of school districts that you work with or foster care or, you know, are there organizations that you sort of match up with to get these at-risk children to come to you?
Yes, absolutely. And so, yes, we work with the schools that are within driving distance, but we also work with the drug and alcohol rehab centers, domestic
mm-hmm.
violence shelters and homeless shelters that are surrounding us, and also the foster agencies, the war veteran centers, anywhere from a 60-mile to 80-mile radius, they bring their clients to the gentle barn, and they all come in shut down, angry, no eye contact, they don't want to talk, and within minutes of hugging a cow, they're just bubbly and talking, and then we move on to the horses where they get to practice leadership skills and courage by hand-feeding horses that are so much
mm-hmm.
bigger than them, so it's a very humbling experience.
Mm-hmm.
They get to feel brave and courageous, and then we move up to the upper barnyard where they get to cradle little teeny tiny chickens in their arms or cuddle turkeys or lay in the straw with the pigs, giving them tummy rubs. And then at the wishing well, We end by mirroring them about how gentle they were or thoughtful or generous or smart or brave they were. And all of a sudden, these kids that are used to being told, shut up and sit down, all of a sudden they're being seen for their value. And they get to see that they're worth something. And those animals breathe the life back into these kids.
Do you ever have any of these kids that you saw maybe as, you know, these struggling kids that may have really come from some serious issues as maybe a 12-year-old, 8 years later being volunteers with you? Do they ever come back and say, you changed my life and I want to be part of what you do here? Have you experienced that?
Yes, many, many times. The story that stands out most for me is this girl who came from a foster agency. She had the most horrific abuse story you could ever fathom. I mean, things, if they were in a horror movie, you would think they were too made up. It was awful, awful childhood this girl had. And she loved the animals, and she hugged the cows, and she cuddled the turkeys, and she held the chickens, and she just really connected with the animals. I worked with her for an entire year in our program. And then the agency stopped. The agency didn't bring her anymore, so I lost contact with her and never heard from her again. Well, many, many years later, we were open to the public on a Sunday, and this beautiful woman came bouncing in, came right up to me, gave me a huge hug, looked me in the eyes and said, "Do you remember me?" And her eyes looked so familiar, but I mean, she was a grown woman now, so I couldn't place her. She reminded me of her name and what agency she came from, and I immediately remembered, and she said, "I want you to know that the animals at the Gentle Barn saved my life." She said, "I was going through such hardship. I felt I was so alone, and those animals loved me unconditionally. They let me know that I had value. I grew up. I went to college. I got a nice job. This is my husband. This is my son. I have a family now and a home.
Wow.
And those animals saved my life." It was lovely, lovely.
Yes. Yeah, it is lovely. Do you have... Let's spend a little bit of time, because I actually know the answer to this, and so I don't know why I started to say that. But you've written, how many books have you written?
One that's published, and I'm working on my second right now, but it hasn't come out yet. My first book is called My Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary Where Animals Heal and Children Learn to Hope. Yeah,
well,
sure.
Tell us about the book.
So the book is, it's kind of like, it's a love story, and it's a book about reaching dreams, manifesting dreams. It's a book that inspires people to go after their dreams. It basically starts in my childhood, and it talks about what animals meant to me and how they saved my life and why I wanted to dedicate my life to saving them. And then it's talking about starting the Gentle Barn and all the challenges I overcame and all the things I had to learn and all the founding animals that taught me everything I know today. It's about the original groups of children that came in and how magical it was to pair children with animals. It's about meeting my husband, Jay, because he came in as a volunteer. So it's about how we became friends and fell in love. It's about our very romantic story. It's about continuing the Gentle Barn through extreme financial hardship and how we survived it. It's about getting through a fire, saving the animals, and saving all our lives. And it's basically about
May I interrupt you?
Sure.
May I interrupt you just very quickly? Because I don't want to forget this. So come back to that in a moment. But Santa Clarita, you're right. There were a lot of fires there. Was that near where your location was?
Yes, we've been affected by the fires twice, and in my book I talk about the fire that hit us in 2007. I talk about how our entire property was on fire and how we had to evacuate 80 animals.
My gosh, go on, I'm sorry.
It was quite the adventure. We survived it, but it was quite the story.
Yes.
But most
of
all, it's about...
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah. Most of all, it's about a 7-year-old child's dream and how I would never, ever let go of it, and how when you really never give up and you really believe in yourself, you could end up with your dreams come true. So hopefully the book will inspire other people to live their dreams. It will connect people more deeply to who animals are, their intelligence, their affection, and their personalities, and they'll get to fall in love with the animals through reading the book. It's a wonderful love story, so it'll engage any romantic. And I hope that all your readers will enjoy it.
Yes, I do too. And it's really cool. I've mentioned this, you know, throughout the show, that I think that your website is so awesome. And on one page, you have the California, then you have the Missouri, and there you have the Tennessee links. And so if people want to support an animal, they could easily just go there and click on something. And when you click on something, for instance, I just clicked on Fawn. She's a what is she considered? Is she a
Fawn?
What is Fawn
the sheep?
Called? Yes,
Fawn.
So is Fawn with you currently? Is she on your site?
Yeah. Fawn is one of our California animals, and she's one of our elders. She's, God, she's in her late teens now. She was rescued from an extreme cruelty case. She was pregnant, so thankfully we got to save her, and she gave birth to twins right here at the Gentle Barn, and she was so scared in the beginning, but now she'll take treats from people's hands, and she's really lovely.
You know, the names. Oh, my God. I don't know. Einstein. Okay. Who comes up with the names? Do you come up with the names?
I name many of them, but we do naming auctions as well. Sometimes when there's a high-profile rescue, we really want to engage the community in being part of their rescue and their recovery. And so sometimes we do naming auctions, and that's really fun too. And the names selected are always brilliant.
God, they are really brilliant. You have some fabulous, fabulous names, and it's so much fun to just get to meet them. And I mean, like, I'm just kind of zipping through this. And don't you have a pig named Menorah, which I think is pretty hysterical? I'm, you know, for those of us that are Jewish, and you know, maybe, are you from Israel? Did I read that somewhere that you, is that Israel? Were you born in Israel, or do I have that totally wrong?
Born, yes. No, I was born in Israel. Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Okay. So, I think, you know, I think there's some humor to me in that the pig is named Menorah. How did Menorah get? Is it a him? How did Menorah get his name?
So Menorah was owned by people that were going to eat her on Christmas, and she unexpectedly gave birth to a bunch of babies, and we were able to drive up to Washington State. It took us 2 days to get there to rescue the mom and all the babies and bring them home to the Gentle Barn. So because it was during the holidays, we did a naming auction, and we wanted to name them all holiday names. So my husband and I actually named the mom. So the mom's name is Menorah because she had eight babies. So for those of you that know what a menorah is, a menorah is a candelabra that holds eight candles of light. So we named her Menorah, and then we did a naming auction for the babies, and their names are Dreidel, Blitzen, Miracle, Gingerbread, Mistletoe, and Tinsel. And then there was Holly and Noel also. They're all holiday names.
God.
Isn't that a riot?
It is a riot. And so for those of you that are listening, you have to go to her site, and you're going to see that picture of Menorah. And I just, it's such a great story. But what fascinates me about what you do is, how did you even know that she needed to be rescued to start with? Who notified you?
Yeah, so this family that was going to eat her, the minute they saw her as a mom, they could no longer see her as a meal, and they reached out to a farm sanctuary in Washington State and asked them for help. But that sanctuary couldn't take in the whole family. And so they put it out on their social media, and one of our followers saw their post and emailed us and let us know about it. And what's amazing about the story is that day that that person emailed us about these pigs, that very day, our pig Zeus, who had been with us for 12 and a half years, he passed away, making room for this family to be able to come in.
Oh, my God. Why does that in some ways not even surprise me? How the universe is working on your behalf and on the not just your behalf, because you would say, no, Marcia, the universe is not working on my behalf at all, frankly. The universe
animals.
Is working on behalf of all of these animals, and we are just
yes.
a conduit. It's
yes.
it's just tremendous. It's absolutely tremendous that people know about. Well, you've been doing this a long time, and I recognize that does help. But I'm looking at I'm looking at some of these names. Okay, so now I'm over to Tennessee, and I'm looking at Luke Skywalker. Now that's I'm sorry, this just kills me. These names are that's not a good choice of words. I apologize for that. So I mean, I heard myself start to say, in my wildest dreams, what is it with all of these words that are coming into my mouth? But I can't imagine. I'm looking at this beautiful bird, and I don't know what it would be like to just cuddle and hug. Now, Luke, I'm assuming, I don't know, but I presume that Luke is a male. Would I be right about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you're not going to hug Luke. But maybe you're going to hug girlfriend who has six sisters, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
gosh. You
and
know, seriously.
Loves to cuddle.
Oh, I just, it's, you know, the pictures. I would just love to walk around with whoever does your photography and just be there while they're taking pictures of these just remarkable looking animals. With I'm looking at Princess Pebble with his hair. I mean, come on, Princess Pebble. I mean, you're a hot mess, and yet you're just so completely adorable, right? I mean, come on. She was neglected. Well, yeah, let's do something. I think your hair kind of looks like the rest of us that haven't gotten to the hair salon lately. And I suppose she doesn't have to worry about getting to the nail salon because, frankly, you take care of that. But, oh, my gosh, she is just – what is she? Is she a donkey? I don't know. I'm being silly.
She's a miniature horse.
She's a miniature horse.
And she had the most horrific neglect to the point where her nails were so long she could barely walk. And we brought her home to the gentle barn. And here's the great part of her story. A lot of animals come into the gentle barn broken, and it takes a long time to convince them that they're lovable. Because you know what it's like when you don't think you're lovable because you never got the care, and then someone tries to give you love, but you don't know how to receive it. Princess Pebbles never did that. Princess Pebble took one look at us and said, "Fix me. I am a princess." And she just always knew who she was and how special she was, even through the neglect and the abuse. So the minute we had love and care to give her, she took it all. She's amazing. She's remarkable. She has so much to teach us.
You know what I find so interesting? The hand goes over the heart when I say this. What I find so fascinating about you, Ellie, in so many ways, is you don't know what name I'm throwing out. And I throw out a name of an animal, and you immediately, you feel it. You can hear it. You know precisely who this animal is over all of these animals, and you have a story that goes along with it, which just shows to me how truly genuine you are in your spirit and why you do what you do. It's so wonderful, and I don't know. If you were to see the Gentle Barn in 5 years from now, how could you envision it?
Well, first of all, thank you, and second of all, I would very much like an East Coast Gentle Barn. I would like to have a Gentle Barn in New York. And I would like to be able to just inspire more and more people to the magic and beauty of these animals. I think that not many people get to meet farm animals, so not many people get to know how intelligent they are and how affectionate they are. And so in 5 years, I would like to have enough social media, enough followers, another location. I would love to have a TV show. I would love to really get the idea out to mainstream that there's no difference between a dog and a turkey and a pig and a cow, that we really, truly, no matter what we look like, we truly are all the same.
Isn't that great? And I would imagine over the years, and you do have a staff and a team, and people can volunteer, correct? So once we're reopened again, you will gladly welcome people to come in and volunteer. Am I right about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm sure that,
and the volunteers have the best job, because our staff feeds, waters, and cleans, but the volunteers get to come in and nurture. So the volunteers, like when we rescue orphaned animals that can't be left alone, we have volunteers that sleep with them overnight. We read out loud to them. We sing to them. We meditate with them. We hold them in our arms. The volunteers have the best job.
Yeah, I bet they do. Do you work with any of the colleges? I'm trying to think what college is up in your area that has it's Davis. That's way too far. I was thinking about veterinarian-type places where people are truly interested in animals. Do you ever get any of the college students that are up in your area come to you as volunteers?
Yeah, we sure do. We have College of the Canyons next door.
That's what it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We have College of the Canyons, we have CalArts, and we have Western University, which is actually a vet school here in Pomona.
Oh, nice. That's nice. Well, you know what? Just as you're able to have people hear about you, understand that you're a sanctuary, understand what that means to you, you know, and that if they do, you know, have that crazy experience where pigeon, the fern, the pigeon, you know, just says, "I'm all yours, just stop where you're going because I'm moving in." You know, if people are aware of animals through whatever that connection is, it's wonderful to know that they can get in touch with you through your website so that they can, you know, help provide that sanctuary for all of these animals. Like, it's clear that it fills your heart. People can certainly donate. I assume you're a 501c, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so people can
absolutely donate.
And, you know, everybody's money goes wherever it wants to go. Nobody's judging here. But if you ever felt the need to just support an organization like the Gentle Barn, this might be a place where you could become a sponsor. Or maybe you work somewhere where you could become a corporate sponsor, which would even be cooler. So think about the people you know. And also, I know that Amazon Smile, for people that would like to support you that way, Amazon Smile is another way that people can support you. And I look forward to this is just, in my opinion, part one. Part two will be down the road, because I think maybe we'll bring Jay in. I'd like to hear what Jay's take is on all of this. But I just want to thank you so kindly for your time and what you mean to the universe and to these animals, because clearly a Gentle Barn is the perfect name for where they live. It's just fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Marcia. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Okay, everybody, go out there and hug the ones you're with and be kind and gentle, and I'll look forward to having you join me again next week on the Born to Talk radio show. Goodbye for now.